Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Freinas at the controls. In this part of the program, we will be bringing you a conversation that we recorded here in our studios last week during the time that we were airing the Alito hearings, a conversation that I had with Petra Diakite. She is the ambassador of Angola to the United States and has been since June of 2001. She was here visiting here and also in Springfield. And we sat down in the studio and talked a little bit about her country, particularly about the long civil war that was fought there and the ways in which the country is still trying to recover. And we'll bring you that conversation now. So do keep in mind, as you listen to this hour of Focus 580, that this is a pre-recorded program and we will not take calls. The way that I thought that we could begin would be to talk a little bit about what has happened in Angola since independence. And I think that's a good place to start because there I expect there will be people listening who aren't familiar with the country and its history. Yeah. Angola was a colony of Portugal and became independent in 1975 after 400 years of being a Portuguese colony. And almost immediately, civil war broke out involving groups that had been active in the country really since the 50s or the 60s, fighting against the Portuguese and fighting for independence. And the two main groups were the MPLA and UNITA. And the MPLA was a group that ended up being supported by Cuba and by the Soviet Union. And UNITA had been supported by South Africa and by the United States. So not only was this a civil war with, I'm sure, a context in the country, but it was also one of those conflicts in which the Cold War was played out and the rivalry between the Soviets and the United States by proxy. So here, I'm interested in having you talk about those two dimensions of the conflict. And first of all, to what extent this truly was a civil war, what exactly was at stake after the Portuguese were gone? Why is it that there wasn't peace?
Yes, so I'm really glad to talk about that, and I will start to tell you that indeed, since the war started even before the proclamation of the independence, at the very same time that President Agostinho Neto was proclaiming independence in the independence in Luanda, Angola was facing invasion from the south and from the by the former regime of apartheid, and from the north from the former regime of former Zaire so which used to host the FNLA, which was another party that was involved in the struggle for liberation. But I would say that the war was basically a war that was in place within the within the context of fighting communism in the region. So there was no any internal dimension of that war. Maybe we can talk of later on, you know, in terms of internal dimension, but basically it was a civil war that was in place that started within the context of the Cold War. Because, of course, for Angola, as made from the beginning the option of being a socialist country, for the United States and South Africa would be really interesting, you know, to fight the expanding of the communism in the region. And it's why immediately after, or even before the proclamation of the independence, the war started in Angola and was therefore almost 30 years, I would say 27 years of civil war. Of course, there are people for and the UNITA at time that they were a rebel movement. They were speaking in terms of civil war because of political discrimination. You know. Between the, especially from the people of the South. But that political discrimination, the discrimination of people from the South, was done mainly by the colonial rulers who tried to convince that the people from the South was a kind of people of second class, you know, and was the people that was more explorated by the colonial regime, and at the same time they made these people move from the South and go to the North to work in the plantation, coffee plantations. So there is a kind of stigma that the people, the Angolans from the North, also did that kind of stigmatization, if you want, of the people from the South. But basically it was a war that was imposed to the Angolans. We never, we don't have in our history and within our pre-colonial history, you know, big history of or records of big fighting between, you know, ourselves. So the war was basically instigated from abroad within the context of the of the Cold War. As you mentioned, the United States and the apartheid regime supported UNITA, and of course, being already a sovereign country, the government has to ask for support of the Cuban regime and the Soviet Union.
So it sounds as if what you're saying is that ultimately the United States was responsible for the war, in the sense that the government of Zaire and South Africa, who were both allied with the United States, intervened post-independence because it was in the interest of the United States not to have Angola become part of the Soviet, be drawn into the Soviet sphere. There was concern of a socialist government, and that ultimately we should say the United States is responsible.
You know, being a diplomat and having encountered the level, the evolution of the bilateral relations between Angola and the United States, I wouldn't say so. But one have also to be realistic, and we can't undo history. That's history. I will tell you that the United States only recognized Angola 13 years ago. Our formal relations were established in 1993 when UNITA declined to accept the results of the very first general elections, and it was a recognition that came basically to punish UNITA, because the elections that were organized in Angola were supervised by the international community, among them the United Nations and many other various countries, including Americans. They realized that the elections were free and fair, and indeed tried to force UNITA to accept the results. UNITA didn't accept and decided to go back to the war. So as a kind of punishment to UNITA, the United States decided to recognize the government of Angola and establish diplomatic relations since then. Okay, we turned one page of history, but basically, you know, it was the situation.
As you say, after a long period of fighting in 1991, there was a peace agreement brokered between the government, between the MPLA and between UNITA and leaders, Mr. Dos Santos and Mr. Savimbi. There was an election in 1992. MPLA wins.
Mm-hmm.
UNITA says, well, mm-hmm. we don't accept that result.
Yes.
And the fighting continued again.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you say, then the United States couldn't really very much longer maintain
Absolutely.
This idea that Mr. Savimbi mm-hmm. was a great Democrat
Absolutely.
If there was an election
mm-hmm.
considered to be free and
mm-hmm.
fair by the UN.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I don't accept.
Mm-hmm.
Then the fighting continued. And the thing that finally ended the fighting was Mr. Savimbi's death in 2002.
Yeah.
So then begins a whole new chapter. And yet here now, several years later,
mm-hmm.
even though the war formally ended,
mm-hmm.
it seems that in many ways
mm-hmm.
the country is still trying to recover from the mm-hmm. long, some 30 years period
mm-hmm.
of fighting.
Yes. You know, the war has been there for 27 years. The civil war started just immediately the end of the war for liberation, the struggle for liberation, which was there for 14 years. At the time that Angola got independence, the level of the illiteracy of the population was 90%. 80%. We didn't have, the majority of the Angola population was not, engaged in the administration. At that time also, there was very little development, you know, in Angola itself. So when the war ended, although the government has made a lot of efforts in terms of scholarization of the population, although the government has made some efforts in terms of building some new infrastructure, creating some and develop some health infrastructures, the war that was there for 27 years divert almost 80% of the national budget for the defense. As a consequence of the war, Angola lost, I would say, 500,000 people. The 70% of the healthcare infrastructures have been destroyed. Healthcare infrastructures. The majority, more than 70% of the infrastructures in terms of roads and building and bridges has been also destroyed. The country has plenty, I would say, next five and 6 million of landmines planted in its soil. The country has one population of 170,000 handicapped people. The country has a huge number of children on the streets, without family, without any kind of care, without any kind of scholarization. We have about 30,000 people, 30,000 children out of the education system. Very first, children for elementary school. So with all those, you know, problems that war brought to Angola, it would be very difficult at that time, 3.5 years of war, you know, for the government of Angola, and I don't believe any government in this world would be able really to present a better situation. Anyway, I can say that things are improving. Actually, the economic situation is much better. Angola grew 14%. The economy of Angola grew 14% last year. there is a big expectation in terms of the economic growth for 25% this year, which is very unusual, but is the reality. And but at the same time, we're still having a lot of problems. We have, for example, 100,000 displaced people just from the UNITA. Not to talk about the refugees, hundreds and thousands of refugees that we have in the neighboring countries, more than 300,000 refugees in the neighboring countries, and the internally displaced people that we have in Angola. Luanda was a city that was built for, let's say, 300,000 inhabitants. We had more than 4 million inhabitants in Luanda because of the war. So you can imagine the kind of the problems that those having all those people in one town that was conceived for such a small number of people can have. So I would say that of course the government is making efforts. The government already was able to reintegrate or send back to their original areas 400,000 people from UNITA in terms of former combatants and their relatives. The government is also integrating the handicapped people that really needs a lot of help. The government is rehabilitating, has a program in place to rehabilitate the infrastructures destroyed by the war, to create new infrastructures. The government has the program and indeed already started the replacement of the public administration all over the country, because during the time of the war, many areas in the country, there was a time that it was 70% of the country was under the control of UNITA, and all the infrastructures related to administration of state were in existence. So now we are in the process also bringing back all those institutions. So is a huge task that government has in play as at hands, but we are happy to say that the peace is really holding, and we are in the process of preparing the new elections to finalize the political process. So new laws are in place, the political and logistical conditions have been created. The National Election Commissions has been created. They are in the process also of expanding the provincial electoral commissions to the provinces. So I would say that, of course, to make war is really relatively easy. But to make peace and especially to reconstruct, the damage made by the war, is very difficult. As I mentioned already, I can't envisage any people, any government, being able at overcoming 100% of the situation in a such a relatively small time. But I could say that the government has really in mind, has defined the strategy for the rehabilitation and the national rehabilitation and reconstruction. We have a program that was designed for 2 years in terms of being able to address all those, main problems. Again, the reconstruction or the relation of the economy, which is important in this framework to keep the economic growth within two digits, to facilitate the fighting against poverty. I believe you know that around 70% of the Angolan population, you know, is living in poverty, and indeed is an aim of the government to be able to eradicate the poverty, especially in the rural areas, and the poverty, you know, among women. Women being the majority of the population, unfortunately, are the ones who suffered more. Mm. We realized that the poverty indeed affect more women, as well as, you know, the sicknesses like HIV, AIDS, and malaria, tuberculosis are affecting more women, and also they are suffering more because the war also disequilibrated the families. And in this framework, the women had also to become the main or the only, you know, support for the for their families, for the education, for the for feeding their families. And in Angolan and African families, you don't have to deal just with the children. You have to deal with your own children, but also with many other children belonging to the family. Sometimes because of the situation, children that lost their parents in the war have also to be, it had to be, you know, with aggregate within our other families, you know, aggregate. So is the situation. But by the way, we are actually, there is a lot of hope. Still long way to go. The government is making efforts, unfortunately, very unfortunately, and because the reality in the international community is that countries that in post-conflict situation benefit from a donors conference for the rehabilitation of the for its rehabilitation. And it was not the case of Angola, based on the argument that Angola is a rich country and has a lot of resources. I used to say that Angola is a rich country, has, you know, many others that did benefit from the donor round table for their rehabilitation. And it is really a discrimination that the Angolan government, you know, had to face. But thank God we have really those resources, and the government is managing to negotiate with those bilaterally with other governments based on the resources that we have really to overcome the situation. So the expectation is quite high in terms of, you know, changing this picture or improve considerable the picture, especially the poverty in the country.
Let me just take a moment here, because I want to, for people who are listening, to reintroduce you, and because we've been talking for a bit here. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Petra Diakite. She is the ambassador of Angola to the United States, has had the post since June of 2001. She also, before that, served as ambassador on different occasions to other countries, including Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Finland, has had other posts in the government, and has some long experience as a diplomat. And this morning's program is being recorded, so that means that we're not taking phone calls. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about a criticism that has been made of the government, particularly now going back a couple of years. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the fact that the government does indeed have some significant natural resources, and oil perhaps is the greatest one. Criticism had been made by international human rights organizations, by the International Monetary Fund, particularly of a period from the late 90s until 2002. They charged that each year, over that period of years, $1 billion in the country's oil revenue went missing. And the allegation was that some people who had the opportunity to take advantage of that did, and that a few people got rich. But as you said, the majority of the Angolan people are poor. And the charge was that the government of Angola was not doing the job that it should in keeping track of the oil revenue and then using that revenue to benefit the needs of the country's people. Mm-hmm. And in fact, some people said that what the government should do is completely throw open the books, mm-hmm. open the account books mm-hmm. to the rest of the world to let mm-hmm. them know how much money was being made, mm-hmm. how much money was being paid to the country by companies that were coming to pump mm-hmm. the oil. What now is the official position of the government on this kind of criticism of mismanagement or corruption when it comes to the country's oil resources?
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a kind of of phantasm that I we have been dealing with since some time. I'd like to say that it is an unfair criticism because the corruption, if you accept me to use to make that translation, is a global phenomenon, and I would say that the war really did create a space for some mismanagement in some areas. But the point I'm trying to make is that there is no any direct link between the mismanagement and the level of poverty that the country is facing actually. It's important to say that the majority, I mentioned earlier that 80%, even 90%, I should say, of the budget was basically for defense. Angola is a huge country. There was a time that all the doors from the international community, in the regular market, were closed to Angola to buy weapons. And it was a time after the elections, when the war restarted, that UNITA succeeded to occupy 70% of the country. So it was important for the government to create conditions to defend the sovereignty. And when you are not, when the right doors are not open to were not opened as the normal doors, the right doors were not open for the government had to find ways, of getting, the weapons it needs to defend the sovereignty of the country. I would say that for the preparation of the very first general elections, the government was really working in good faith. And what happened? All the infrastructures, military infrastructures, the government just started, closing. The weapons doing the same, some of them are in obsolete state, putting on aside. Indeed, the government was preparing for peace based on the very first general elections. But UNITA wasn't preparing itself for peace. She was prepared for war. So what happened? When they restarted the war, the government wasn't prepared at all. So they started occupying the country till 70% of the national territory. So the government had, to go to the international market and find ways of being helped with new weapons. It is costful. And no one country in this world really opened their, military budget, open like this. I mean, I don't believe. But I will tell you that those missing billions of dollars, indeed, the situation came because of lack of discipline in terms of doing accountability of the public expenditures. Angola is working with the International Monetary Fund. We are improving our relations. And the last visits that they did to the country, they realized that, okay, there was explanation, relevant explanation, you know, related to those missing billions. It was not like because everybody just, you know, or some of the officials of the government, they made a division of the money like they so put in their pockets. But it was a lack of discipline. If I can give an example, is like that. So there is one problem with some ministries. They will go to the Minister of Finance, and without being part of the budget, they will ask for some money to do some urgent needs. And instead of, you know, organizing the accountability, they didn't. So with the world, the IMF, they succeed really to make clear that the money wasn't missing like it was, you know, informed in the news and the international community. But I would say also that the government acknowledged that we have that problem, the problem of mismanagement, the problem of bad governance, and it is part of the program of the government for the improvement of the improvement of the overall, you know, administration, also to deal with the better levels of good governance, transparency, accountability. I would say that actually in Angola is not anymore as it was during the time, during the time of the war. Actually, even the ministers, they are supposed, indeed, I should say before that, the government itself is organizing symposiums, seminars, and workshops to help really the its leadership at all levels, by ministers, vice ministers, directors of national companies, really to improve their skills in terms of being accountable. And I would tell you that we had some cases that people from the administration, even ambassadors and former ministers, they were sent to the court because of mismanagement of the funds. So today is not like it was in the past anymore. For example, when somebody had problems of health, urgent needs, it was okay, we have to send the Minister X or some personality to South Africa. So do quickly and go to the Ministry of Finance or to Sonangol or to Wendyama, ask them that we need to do this, and they will do. It was like this in the past. To send somebody to South Africa in the plane, the expenses of hospitalization, etc. It was, you know, really expensive. But we used to do this in the past. Actually, people who does that have to reimburse the government. So things are really changing, and the government, the president, José Eduardo dos Santos, has been really strict in terms of changing that image. You know, even if there was some cases of personal benefit from the kind of I would not say the organization, but coming from the fact that, okay, war was the main priority. And so as the government was concentrating on the war, sometimes people could divert, you know, some amounts of the money from here or there, but that time has gone. But again, it's important to clarify that the level of poverty in Angola doesn't come because the mismanagement of the national, you know, revenues. It's coming from the war that have been in place for more than 20 years, actually 27 years. Mm-hmm. So war really ravaged the country, and it is important to acknowledge that, you know. So I, in conclusion, I would say that, okay, as everywhere in the world or in many other you know, countries, the government of Angola is also making you know, efforts really to overcome that that image. But I would say so that people that still having nostalgia from the past will always bring back you know, missing billions, and they will always add some more, maybe two after four. And it's something that really the only solution will be, you know, explain also all the time what we are doing in terms of improving transparency and good governance. So I believe that at some point they will say, okay, so they will give up.
We have, we're coming into about our last 10, 15 minutes. Maybe again, I should introduce again our guest, Petra Diakite. She is ambassador of Angola to the United States. She's here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois. We're recording this interview, so that means in this part of the show, we're not taking calls. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit earlier about the fact that there was an election in 1992, and this mm-hmm. was a contest between mm-hmm. the government led by Mr. Dos Santos mm-hmm. and UNITA led by mm-hmm. Joseph Savimbi, the parties that had contested now through this long war. Mm-hmm. There was an election. MPLA won. Mr. Savimbi said, I don't accept. Mm-hmm. The result, the war continued. And as I said, it really finally took his death to end the fighting. Mr. Dos Santos, the president, has said that there will be elections now this year, 2006. Mm-hmm. Last elections in the country were in 1992. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. And it does seem to be that now UNITA has renounced the armed struggle, has become a political party, mm-hmm. and it is the largest opposition mm-hmm. party.
Yes.
There are other political parties, but mm-hmm. UNITA is the largest mm-hmm. opposition party. Will indeed elections happen this year, 2006?
I would say that maybe. Maybe why? Because the president had said so, and the preparations are in place. Last week, the National Electoral Commission was saying that maybe 3 months is very short time for all the preparations, having encountered the state of the roads and the bridges, for communication and live circulation of the people. Even to and also landmines that are in place, but so I believe that with some efforts we will be able to see those elections in place later in this year. Otherwise, it can be also can happen some, you know, delay in terms of, you know, happen at. In 2007, but now the government is making efforts really to cope with all the needs of the National Electoral Commission to make the elections happen in 2006. We think that we will be able to do that. The national electoral laws. law, you know, says that the president has to define the date for elections 3 months before. So it is what the law says, and it will be still, you know, some time. We are at the beginning of the year. I was in Rwanda just last month, and indeed I put that question. We will be able to do the elections this year. Why don't we announce that 2006 will not be possible and it will be 2007? They said, no, we still... our authorities said that, no, we're still in time, so we can, you know... it's too early to say that we'll not be able to do in 2006. And so the work is in place, as I said. And we believe that they will happen
this year.
But it's important also to say that the preparation should be really, you know, in place to avoid the problems that we have in the past. We are looking out to have general elections, fair, free, and very inclusive elections, without, you know, accommodating everybody, to avoid the complaints at all.
Do you see, as I said, UNITA is the main opposition party.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see, though, UNITA, does it realistically have the strength to pose much of a challenge to the MPLA? I think the answer probably is no.
Yeah,
that it
definitely
doesn't.
Definitely. For the time being, you know, UNITA, with the death of Mr. Savimbi, UNITA faced quite difficult problems in terms of reorganizing itself. So actually they are doing well as a normal political party, which is also quite a difficult transition.
Hmm.
But I don't think that UNITA already has, you know, the strength to overcome the situation. And I think that just to participate in elections in a good face and in a creative and positive way, looking how to learn more and how to grow, maybe will enable them, you know, later on sometime to be in the power. But for the time being, and being realistic, I don't think so.
UNITA had something like 50,000 soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And after the peace finally was concluded, mm-hmm. the commitment was made to try and help reintegrate them into mm-hmm. Angolan society.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them apparently were absorbed or were going to become part of the army, but only a small fraction.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that there would be some training made available for
mm-hmm.
them, and that at least for some period of time,
mm-hmm.
there would be some assistance provided to them and to their families,
mm-hmm.
which is a considerably larger number than 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
It was hundreds of thousands of people.
It was, yes. Mm-hmm.
How well do you think that Angola has done in bringing people who fought for UNITA into Angolan society, managed to settle them, managed to get them jobs, managed to get them into some kind of normal life and into the flow of normal life to the extent that
mm-hmm.
such a thing exists now?
Mm-hmm. No, you see, that situation is, in that situation, we have people from UNITA, but we have also even former soldiers from MPLA.
Mm-hmm.
And we have also people from the ordinary people that, as I mentioned early, the IDPs, the internal displaced people that just, you know, were concentrated basically in Rwanda, but also moved to other areas. So it is a priority also for the government to help all that people to reintegrate. Well, when it comes to the UNITA, I mentioned earlier that at least 400,000 of the 100,000 that they were, in general terms, including, you know, relatives, we are already, you know, reintegrated in their original areas. There are new programs in terms of reintegrating the others, as well as the others, former unit, ex-combatants and families, as well as the people from the MPLA and the society. But it's a many challenge that we have. You know, the government has been doing this almost alone. I should say we are thankful we got some humanitarian aid from the international community. We got also from the United States. But the task is huge, as indeed we need more help and support for, you know, to enable the government to do this this task. But the philosophy is that for the ones who are from rural areas and would like to go back, they will go. The ones who have a kind of profession, you know, a kind of job that before they joined the war, they can pass through courses for updating, you know, their skills, and after that being also reintegrated within the public administration, like professors, nurses, and people that have profession with skills. Others also are encouraged to open their own business based on also some training, and after which the government gave them some tools to start their own personal or familiar activity, like carpenters, I need help, zapateros, shoemakers, those kind of professions.
Mm-hmm. We're coming to the point here. We just have a couple of minutes left, and I would like to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about the relationship between Angola and the United States. Mm-hmm. And it is very clear that, as far as the United States is concerned, that we would like to have positive relations with Angola, if for no other reason than Angola has oil. And we're expecting that in the future a significant amount of America's oil will come from Africa, and Angola, after Nigeria, is the second biggest supplier in sub-Saharan Africa. So it's an important resource that the United States needs. I would hope also the United States would be interested in the idea of stability in the region as well. Mm-hmm. What is in the Angolan interest? What is it that Angola would like to have from the United States?
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to start by saying that the Angolan oil has been, sending to the United States even the Angolan business, oil business, between Angola and the United States has been going, quite well, smoothly, even during the time of the war. Mm-hmm. Never, ever the American interests in Angola in terms of oil were put in cause. And actually, of course, the relations are good politically, quite good. I think I would say even good than ever, better than ever. And indeed, oil is, play a huge, role within our relations. But we are looking how to diversify, the relations and the American investments out of oil sector. We are a country, the oil sector is doing quite well. We are a country that has been in war, and we need to have investments in place that will enable to normalize the life in the country. So investments in agriculture as a big employer are very good to help us, to help the government to send back people from their original areas and being able to help for their own sustainability. Agriculture, healthcare, education are the areas of priority and areas that really we would like to see more American investments there. By the way, we are having actually some new interest from the United States, and they cope with our own interest in terms of hotelry, tourism. And tourism and hotels. We are having also commercial interest from the Angola, and the United States also is coping with our interest in terms of buying new aeroplanes from Boeing. Yes, we just signed a contract last September to have some new, about six new planes from Boeing, which is a quite big deal and a good business for the United States. Mm-hmm. So is for us. Indeed, what we need from the United States is really, you know, to help also more in terms of the, you know, aid for development.
And there we'll have to leave it. We're just about finished with the conversation in any case. This was an interview that I recorded here at our studios last week, just a week ago today, with Pitrit Diakite. She is the ambassador of Angola to the United States, has had that position since June of 2001. She was visiting here in Champaign-Urbana, was then going on to give a talk in Springfield, and we were fortunate enough to have her with us here in the studio. This and many past programs from Focus are available on our archive. If you'd like to listen to this interview again or others, you can go to will.uiuc.edu.